Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection, and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. Now, I am probably a lot like you. I am a very casual college basketball fan, but when the schedule turns to March, that's when I get interested, that's when I get invested, and that's when I start betting on college basketball games, tournaments, NCAA tournament, whatever's out there, I'm betting on it because I love watching college basketball this time of year. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code MANIX. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code MANIX. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
And we are back. Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. And welcome in everybody that is listening on the podcast feed. If you are not a subscriber, get over to that feed, Boxing with Chris Mannix. Hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get this pod in your feed every single week. So, busy weekend in boxing. You had a huge card over in Saudi Arabia. You have huge news coming out of the influencer boxing space. And you have big news, bigger news maybe, coming out of the traditional boxing space. You had Anthony Joshua picking up his fourth consecutive win, ending the boxing dreams, we think, of Francis Ngannou. You had Jake Paul and Mike Tyson announcing they will share a ring this summer. In a fight that will be streamed on Netflix. And Canelo Alvarez and Jaime Munguia finally concluded their business. They will fight on May 4th in Las Vegas. So, a lot to get into. Corey Erdman, longtime boxing writer, good friend of the podcast. He joins me to run through all of it on this week's show. So, stick around. Great conversation coming up next with Corey Erdman. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is.
In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees, a much bigger range than most grills. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. Direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You'll cook on two levels at the same time so you can make enough for everyone, then clean up quick with the pull and clean grease and ash management system at the front of the grill. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
All right, Corey Erdman, what did you make of the Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou spectacle in Riyadh this past weekend?
Well, I mean, first of all, apologies, because when you texted me and you said, Corey, I want to talk about the big knockout and the big event this week, I thought you meant Stephen Butler, Steve Rolls. So just let me scramble here for a second.
Is that the end of Steve Rolls? Did we see the end of the Canadian assassin, Steve Rolls?
I think that he's in the stage of his career now where if he wants to continue, the assignments will get harder and for less money. And that is a calculus that he'll have to make in his mind and in his heart, whether he wants to continue.
It's a very diplomatic answer from you. Very diplomatic.
You know, we're both Canadians. We got to be nice to one another. As far as the spectacle on over the weekend, it was really long. It took up a large chunk of my day. But in terms of what, you know, what came out of it, so to speak, precisely what I think everyone wanted, which was the ultimate viral clip of what was, you know, one of probably the five biggest right hands that I've ever seen landed on film, in my life, Joshua knocking out Ngannou. That was basically, as hard as you could deliver a right hand in a connecting flush. And, you know, you name an event Knockout Chaos and you put these two big stars in with one another. What you're wanting in 2024 is a viral clip that more people than would have tuned in live will watch and rewatch and watch again. That's what they got. I think mission accomplished for the organizers.
Yeah, you could see that second right hand coming a mile away. And I don't blame the referee for not stopping the fight after that second knockdown. But Ngannou clearly wasn't back. Like, he was still foggy. His legs were still wobbly. He quite literally walked into that right hand. Anthony Joshua just stepped into it in the most transparent way humanly possible and leveled him with that shot. I heard Ngannou say after the fact that it didn't hurt because he didn't feel it. He doesn't remember it. So I guess that's a saving grace there. But the reality is, this is what should have happened with Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou. The reality is that Fury Ngannou and the competitiveness of it was far more about what Tyson Fury didn't do going into that fight than some kind of, you know, incredible transition by Francis Ngannou from MMA into boxing, put in with a fit, focused, sharp, and heavy-handed professional heavyweight. Francis Ngannou never stood a chance. I don't care how good a chin he showed in UFC. I don't care that in UFC they use smaller gloves. That doesn't mean anything. What matters is, you know, how a punch is thrown and the kind of leverage a fighter has behind it and whether or not that opponent can see that punch coming. So this was always the way it was supposed to be. The question is with AJ is, does this, you know, look, this was not a, and this was talked about after the fight, that this was not a continuation down the path that he began on back last March when he fought Jermaine Franklin, the first of three fights in 2024. Those were boxing matches, right? Jermaine Franklin, Robert Hellenius, Otto Wallin. That was a progression of getting back to your normal self as a contending heavyweight. This was a complete deviation from that. This was a chance to grab what was likely a boatload of money against an opponent that really did not have any chance against. I mean, look, Joshua's reaction after the fight, and I'll put that in air quotes, reaction, was nothing. Like, he knew that this was exactly what he was supposed to. Ben Davison jumps into the ring, and even celebrate. This is just like a fist bump at the very end. So, you know, they knew this wasn't a real heavyweight test. So does that performance in any way change your opinion of where Anthony Joshua is at this point in his career?
It doesn't change mine, but I also think that my opinion and our opinion on the inside kind of doesn't matter in terms of what they wanted to get out of this. I think that two things matter. One, general public perception of AJ, which right now is on an upward trend, you know, ever since really the Hellenius knockout, but especially after how he looked against Otto Wallin, and then with this knockout, I think that, like, I've been hearing people say, hey, is this actually the best heavyweight in the world? Like, even those questions being asked, those questions being posed, that's a good thing for AJ. And I also think that there's a tiny bit of this that is an overall positive for AJ, not just in terms of the dollars that he'll put in his account from this, but just that boost of confidence, hearing people speaking glowingly about him again. AJ's really gone, close to 3 years now, more than 3 years, of people doubting him, of people saying he was a fraud all along, and suddenly that tenor has changed entirely, and his surroundings have changed entirely all over again. So I could see, you know, this just being, it's not a continuation, as you were saying, of real boxing matches where we're seeing growth from Anthony Joshua, but it's a continuation of just positive things happening for him, which is something I'm sure he's been waiting for quite some time. And he's talked very openly about the strain that has come with being as gigantic a figure and a figure as important to the boxing marketplace and ecosystem as he has been for so long. To be that figure, but to kind of be maligned for that long, that really wears on you mentally. And so now he's in an entirely different place. And that's despite, as you put it, doing something that should have been expected of him in that fight. And I think that, you know, Ngannou was given the benefit of the doubt, I think rightfully, because we, you know, I think that logically we could look at that Fury fight and see, hey, this is a fighter in Fury who didn't take this all that seriously. He was clearly kind of messing around in the ring, was obviously kind of messing around in camp and didn't prepare a whole lot. And he labored to 10 rounds and escaped with that decision. For someone who doesn't have the capability of being deeply unserious the way that Tyson Fury does, Joshua went in there, took it seriously, and yeah, you saw him react the way that he reacted with Ben Davidson afterward. Just a casual fist bump, he was almost annoyed to have had to have done that, but he did exactly what a fighter of his caliber should do against really a novice or non-boxer.
Yeah, he's not going to be annoyed this morning when he takes a look at his bank account and sees what eight figures popped in there. The question now, though, is what does AJ do next? And the obvious answer is to fight the winner of Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou, though there are a couple of problems potentially with that. One, you know, Fury acknowledged on Friday that there was a bilateral rematch clause for that fight. Both Fury and Usyk can, you know, trigger a immediate rematch. So that's a problem if you're Anthony Joshua. The other problem is, what if Usyk wins, right? And look, there's a huge market for Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua 1. I don't know what the market would be for Anthony Joshua, Alexander Usyk 3. Joshua is certainly a different fighter than the guy he was a few years ago. New training team opposite him, Ben Davis and Lee Wiley. You know, they've obviously made an impact on him, but is there that much intrigue in that particular fight at the moment? I don't know. So the alternative for AJ, instead of waiting for the Fury-Usyk situation to sort itself out, is to fight Filip Hrgović. Now, Filip Hrgović is the number one contender for the IBF belt. My understanding of what Hrgović is going to do next is Hrgović is planning to be on this June 1st Saudi card. That's the card that's probably going to be headlined by Dmitry Bivol and Artur Beterbiev. It's probably going to feature the Matchroom versus Queensberry 5-on-5. Hrgović aims to be on that card. At the same time, he is also going to be on standby for May 18th, just in case Tyson Fury's cut opens back up again, just in case something happens to Alexander Usyk. Filip Hrgović is planning on or working towards being the replacement for that fight. So maybe May 18th, more likely June 1st. If it is June 1st, the expectation is that Hrgović is going to fight for the IBF heavyweight title. Tyson Fury even said this on Friday, where he's like, you know, Hrgović, you know, he's going to be there fighting for that IBF belt, acknowledging that once Fury Usyk is over, that IBF belt is going to become vacant. They're either going to fight AJ, they're going to fight each other. They're not going to fight Filip Hrgović. So AJ, who is ranked inside the top, three by the IBF, is in a position to challenge for that vacant belt on June 1st. He's going to have to decide, Corey, what is the right course of action here? Is it wait and say, I'm going to fight the winner of Fury Usyk, hoping that happens, hoping that Fury wins, hoping the Saudis say, you know what, that rematch clause is stupid, we're going to go right into Fury against AJ? Or does he go for a heavyweight title, a bird in the hand, against a dangerous guy? I mean, Filip Hrgović is undefeated. He's a former, Olympic gold medalist. He is the real deal at heavyweight. And there's a lot of risk in taking that fight if you're Anthony Joshua. So what do you think of these options for AJ as he's sifting through them over the next few weeks?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, if it's not Hrgović, you know, do you try and organize kind of a fight that seems, you know, a little less delicious now than it might have a year ago, you know, against like Deontay Wilder, but that comes with danger as well. And I don't know what the situation is with Wilder. If you do decide you want to face Hrgović right away, does that require some recalibration of that card? Because is that not the main event over Beterbiev and Bivol in the minds of the general public? Like, Beterbiev Bivol is, like, for me, that would be the fight that I would look forward to over Joshua Hrgović. But that may not be what, you know, the Saudis and the organizers think would be the main event. And if they don't, are they willing to do that on the undercard of Bivol Beterbiev? Or does he wait and see whoever wins in a vacant IBF title fight and then go after the winner of that later on in the year? You know, these are...
That's a lot of time off.
It's a long time, you know, though.
He sure seems like a guy that doesn't want to slow this train down. Three fights in 2023, one fight already in 2024. You know, you talk to people around him and they want to fight three times in 2024. They get it. The best AJ is an active AJ. And, you know, waiting to see what happens with Hrgović and like Daniel Dubois, that doesn't strike me as an appealing option for AJ.
Yeah, and any interim fight that he takes against a non-UFC fighter is going to bring some risk. You know, whether you want to stay, if you want to stay busy against, I'm just throwing out hypotheticals. If you want to stay busy against Zhilei Zhang, you want to face anyone else in the top 10, they're in and around the danger level of a Filip Pergovic. So, you know, when you're looking at the risk-reward ratio just for staying busy, I don't know if it's worth it if it's not just the title shot. So, I mean, I would love it if he could just turn around and step in and do this June 1st, whatever kind of reconfiguration we have to do to make that happen. If I'm handling AJ, that would be the decision that I would make.
Yeah, and one thing I have to remember about Fury Usyk is that regardless of who wins, let's just say Fury wins and there's a deal that's worked out to allow him to fight AJ later this year, that cut is most likely going to reopen. And this fight against Usyk is most likely going to be a difficult one. Fury's not going to turn around and fight AJ in like August, right? It's September, October, November. It's down the line. So AJ's going to have to deal with being out of the ring for 5, 6, 7 months before he takes on a Tyson Fury. So there's danger to both, right? Like in an ideal world, Fury wins, they fight in September. It's a major event. But Usyk could win. There could be a rematch. You could be left out in the dark. Meanwhile, Hergovich is going to go on, win a world title by beating someone like Daniel Dubois, and AJ's looking around going, well, what's next for me? Surely Hergovich would probably fight him, no question. There's a lot of money in that fight, but that might not be till October, November of this year. So, you know, I go back and forth on this. If I'm Team AJ, if I'm Eddie Hearn, and I'm confident I can beat Filip Hergovich, I would take that fight. I would get that belt. I would take that fight. I know this risk. Look, if AJ loses to Hergovich, we're right back to square one, right? Like where, you know, we can't make Fury versus AJ. We can't make Usyk versus AJ 3 because he's coming off a loss. But if he wins, certainly becomes a lot more palatable, becomes once again for the Undisputed Championship against either one of them. So a lot to think about in the camp of Anthony Joshua. All right, so I know many of you out there have had a frustrating experience buying tickets. I am an avid concert goer to some of the bands that I'd like to see. In the past, it has been Tom Petty. Nowadays, it's U2. I went to a Bruce Springsteen concert recently. It can be challenging to find the right tickets, to make sure you're getting your tickets in the right section that you want to be in. You shouldn't have to worry when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their best price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. I'm always on the lookout for tickets to my favorite performers, and Game Time is the best place to find them. Last-minute tickets, flash deals, zone deals, easy to find and buy tickets for every kind of event in your area. You got views from all the seats in the venue, and the lowest price guarantee. Event cancellation protection, job loss protection, everything you need when you are looking to buy tickets. There are a lot of big boxing events coming up over the next couple of months. Tickets are going to be hard to find. Game Time is where you want to go to get the best seats. Again, create an account and redeem code MANNIX, M-A-N-N-I-X, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. See the view from your seat before you buy so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. All-in prices show your total up front so you know you're getting a great deal before you check out. Buy tickets in seconds with just 2 taps. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code MANNIX for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code MANNIX, M-A-N-N-I-X, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees, a much bigger range than most grills. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. Direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You'll cook on two levels at the same time so you can make enough for everyone, then clean up quick with the pull and clean grease and ash management system at the front of the grill. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
One last thought on that Saudi card. I was so disappointed in Zhe Li Zhang. So disappointed in how he performed in that fight. Zhe Li Zhang, to recap, lost a decision, split decision, majority decision win, a loss to Joseph Parker. This was a fight that it seemed like every time Zhe Li Zhang threw a punch, Joseph Parker went down, like quite literally. Like he dropped him in the third round, dropped him again in the eighth. Not concussive shots by any stretch, but the problem was Zhang didn't throw anything else. And this was a huge opportunity for Zhang. Big stage, big fights to come if he won, chance to put himself in that world title picture, and he laid a big, fat egg. I was among the people, Corey, that thought, look, at 40, Zhe Li Zhang could have this George Foreman-like renaissance. He could fight 3 or 4 years at a high level. Watching that guy in the ring, I don't know if he has the gas tank to beat any of these top-tier guys. Because you remember, like in the 12th round, Sean George is in the corner going, dude, you got to let your hands go. You got to go for a knockout. Zhe Li Zhang's nodding his head going, yeah. Then he goes out and lands zero punches in the 12th round. Zero. That is the definition of not following instructions from your corner. So I went from being sky high on Zhe Li Zhang coming into this fight to rock bottom on Zhe Li Zhang right now. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this was a higher level version, really, of what happened with Zhang against Jerry Forrest, right? Where, yeah. Like, it's everything he lands seems to produce a knockdown or hurts the guy, but he just runs out of gas. And obviously, there were major
circumstances. Did you see him looking at the clock in, like, the fifth round? When I see a guy early in the fifth round looking up at the clock, it's like, oh, boy, we're in trouble.
Yeah, and again, like with that Forrest fight, obviously, like his liver was failing him and whatnot. You know, so there were other things happening, but it's a trend that we've seen from him in the past, which is that he's capable of a certain output, and a certain amount of movement, and anything beyond that is just above his capabilities. And when that's the case, you know, Joseph Parker, even though he was able to floor him twice, Parker presents kind of the worst challenge for Zhang, which is Parker is probably the best mover of the top 10 heavyweights right now, just in terms of pure footwork and ability to move around the ring. And that's bad for Zhang, you know? Like, I think that there are other matchups that might be a little bit better for him, but he's still fighting against that hourglass, right? But if we're going to use the George Foreman comparison, I mean, we sort of saw this with Foreman as well, where we saw him get, like, thoroughly outboxed by Tommy Morrison. But then you put him in the right matchup with someone that'll stand right in front of him, and he can land his best stuff, and he could produce a miraculous win. I still think that there is that in the tank for Zhang, where if you have a guy that'll stand right in front of him, you know, like we saw against Joe Joyce, he has, you know, he'll give you 35 punches around and about 10 of them are going to buzz you and one of them is going to knock you down. But if you're going to move, he'll throw 10 or less per round and then he's completely hopeless. So I think there's a little bit of hope still there for him, but I think you have to be realistic with your hopes for a 40-year-old bomber really at this point.
What a comeback too from Joseph Parker.
Like, oh, yeah.
He looked done. He looked done after that Joe Joyce knockout. It wasn't just that. It was like, you know, the performances against Chisora were okay. You know, but then Joyce just flattens him. You're like, all right, well, this guy is now kind of a gatekeeper. You know, he wins a bunch of low-level fights in a row, takes out Deontay Wilder, takes out Jay Lee Zhang. I mean, another example of why losses are not relevant. Now Joe Joyce is up there, you know, arguably third or fourth best heavyweight in the world at the moment. So
yeah,
good for Joseph Parker in that one.
Yeah, and when it comes to Parker, yeah, I mean, I think it's an indication that losses don't have to matter. It's about, like, what was the impact of those losses, both physically and psychologically? And for Joseph Parker, I think rightfully, you know, when we saw those performances against Chisora and then against Joe Joyce, we thought, okay, is he just utterly eroded already? You know, before he can get to his mid-30s and whatnot. Joe Parker's only 32 years old right now. And so I think he hit the sweet spot with those losses where they didn't deteriorate him completely physically, and he didn't lose his confidence. In fact, he's gained it with a new camp and with a new focus on his approach in the ring. This is a totally different Joseph Parker, and I think we can kind of leave those performances behind, because this is very firmly the fourth best heavyweight in the world with a real chance against any of those guys. I mean, he's not going to fight Tyson Fury because they're very close friends, but a chance against any of those guys above him.
Yeah, and look, when a fighter and a trainer click, things can change. We've seen it, you know, with Freddie Roach here in the U.S., working with Pacquiao, working with Miguel Cotto, and we're seeing it over in the U.K. with Joseph Parker and Andy Lee. They have a great chemistry. They have great game plans. Joseph Parker follows those game plans. You know, he's a threat again, you know, no question. I'm curious to see how the Zhang rematch works out. They both acknowledge that it was a two-fight deal that they signed with each other after the fight. You know, the only thing I can say about Zhang is, and it's not an excuse really, but with the time these fights start over there is crazy. It is crazy. We talked about the length of these cards. The main event didn't start until 3:30, 3:45 in the morning. The co-main event, Zhang and Parker, was probably around 2:30 in the morning local time. That is bonkers. Even in the U.S., where some of these fights start crazy late, East Coast time, it's still like 11:30, 12 o'clock when most of these fights, even the late ones, ultimately start. You never hear about fights in the U.S. starting at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. So, look, it's not, again, it's not an excuse, but that's a weird dynamic at play there where these fights are starting so, so late, which has to throw some of these guys off, right? Like, you know, you're used to a certain thing. You wake up at X time, you go to the arena. Now you're waking up at a different time. You go into the arena at like 10 p.m. for a 3 a.m. start. Like, it's just, it's crazy. The whole thing is totally crazy.
No, it's hard on the fighters. It's hard on everyone. Like, I shout out to the commentary team, the broadcast team too. I don't know who our lead energy drink sponsor was on that night, whether it was Celsius or C4, but shout out to them as well, because somehow they had energy for the main event. But yeah, that's a lot to contend with. And when you're not sure exactly when you're supposed to warm up for, with lengthy delays and whatnot, that can be an issue. And especially, any aging athlete will tell you how crucial warming up will be. And when that is sort of thwarted a little bit for you, that can be an issue. But yeah, I mean, congratulations to Joseph Parker. It's a big win, but I still do think that Zhang against the right opponent can still be a serious threat.
Yeah, we'll see. I was a believer. I was a Zhang truther for some time now. I'm a little less certain about that right now. All right. The big news that broke over the last couple of days is that Jake Paul is going to face Mike Tyson in a boxing mega event. Talk more about that in a moment. On July 20th, AT&T Stadium in Dallas, this will be broadcast or streamed on Netflix, which will be Netflix's first foray into boxing. They've dipped their toe into other sports, golf, tennis in the past, but this will be their first shot at boxing. Look, I know that Jake is constantly on the lookout for marquee names. I never expected to be Mike Tyson. Never. I know there's some history between the two. Jake fought on Mike's undercard when Mike fought Roy Jones back in 2020. But this is wild, Corey. Jake Paul against Mike Tyson. And I said this on another show and it got picked up on the internet over the last couple of days. But I really believe that this is going to be the most watched boxing event in decades. I think you're going to have to go back to like the 70s when you had the Rumble in the Jungle and the Thrill in Manila and all those great Muhammad Ali fights. I think this is going to do bigger numbers. Some people at HBO have pointed out to me like the Tyson numbers back in the day were huge, 40, 45 million people, watching. But I think this is going to exceed that. Netflix has a subscriber base of 260 million. And you know that Netflix, when this fight is happening, is going to throw this fight right on the main page, one click, you're there. You've got two guys with huge followings. Jake Paul's got a following amongst a younger generation. Mike Tyson goes across generations, but is especially well known, amongst like the boomer generation and younger generation, Generation X. I think this is going to do staggering numbers, maybe nine-figure numbers on Netflix. We can talk about what it's going to look like in the ring, because I don't even know what it's going to look like in the ring. But what did you think when you first heard that Jake Paul and Mike Tyson were to square off in a boxing mega event?
I mean, I laughed, first of all, just like threw my head back and laughed. It's because it's hilarious that this is actually materializing. Like, it's so absurd that we're in this place where something like this could materialize. And I don't mean that nefariously. Like, it's a bizarre turn of events for us for to say the words Jake Paul is fighting Mike Tyson. But I had the same reaction. Immediately, I started thinking, like, where is this going to rank in terms of like the most viewed boxing matches of all time? And it's going to do spectacularly well, both at the box office and in terms of viewership. Like, it's not on pay-per-view, so I don't exactly know how it'll just be quantified, I'm sure, just in pure views. And those numbers they're going to be monstrous, because it's also pitting kind of like boxing's two biggest social media curiosities ever in Jake Paul and old Mike Tyson. You have Jake, who has started this debate since the beginning of his pro fighting career, of how far can he possibly go? Who can he possibly beat? How real were these victories that he's had before? And for Mike Tyson, I mean, a Tyson comeback has been boxing's most reliable, renewable resource since 1992. Like, since he lost to Buster Douglas, for various reasons, we have been asking the same question. What will Mike look like when he comes back? Can Mike still be the heavyweight champion? And it's continued forever and ever. And the formula has been the same basically the whole time. And they just need to roll that same thing out this time out. And it's going to work perfectly, because the elements here with Jake and Mike are perfect. You're going to see a constant onslaught of those same first 20 knockouts of Mike's career, like the Jim Jacobs VHS that they used to send out to all the media outlets. You'll just see the same loop of like a 20-year-old Tyson knocking guys out. And then you're going to see that same clip of Mike Tyson in his undies hitting the pads for 10 seconds, that the aggregation sites always roll out and say, Tyson at 54, he looks scary. You're just going to see that again and again and again. And we know that that is enough to trick people into buying. Not trick people into buying this. I don't know how devious they're going to be with what this fight is and what it isn't, but it will compel people to buy this fight.
Yeah, and look, they didn't even have to buy it. I mean, the majority of people that are interested are probably already Netflix subscribers.
Yeah.
I mean, the Netflix is, you know, the largest global platform maybe ever, you know, with that many subscribers. So all they have to do is open up their phone, toss it on their smart TV, and give it a shot. This does have the potential to be a disaster, though, right? Like, I mean, it could be a mess. Look, Mike Tyson has been hitting the pads, right? And has been working out. Though I saw an interview he did with Joe Rogan over the last couple of years where Joe brought up that famous scene where Mike's in the gym throwing a bunch of punches. And Mike's like, yeah, that was a 30-second clip. I had to sleep for a week to recover from that. And there was also that footage out there of Mike Tyson walking through, I think it was Saudi, with a cane. So that, I think, was more recent. So I don't know what to expect from Mike Tyson. I think the state of Texas is going to have an interesting decision on its hands about how it's going to handle this fight. Like, it's not going to be sanctioned as a pro fight. That's not going to happen. There's no way even a state like Texas is going to sanction soon-to-be 58-year-old Mike Tyson against 27-year-old Jake Paul. Like, you can't do it. They're also probably going to have to be some rules about the size of the gloves, the number of rounds, the time amount in each round. Like, there's going to have to be some delicate deliberations about this, because ultimately, you are talking about a 27-year-old, you know, look, not a great boxer, but, you know, 9-1 with some real power in that right hand, going up against a guy who is closing in on senior citizen status. Like, that is what we are talking about with Jake Paul against Mike Tyson. I think Mike Tyson can still have some moments, right? Like, you go back and watch that Roy Jones fight. Mike's older than Roy, but Roy looked far more washed than Mike did in that fight. Like, Mike looked like he could have put Roy out if he really wanted to. Can he still dial that back for a moment or two? Maybe. Maybe. And that's what makes this fight somewhat interesting, to watch. But I think you do have to be careful. Like, when this fight was announced, one of the things I thought of was the Vitor Belfort Evander Holyfield fight from, what was it, about a year ago now. That did not go well for Evander Holyfield. That's what it looks like when you put an old man in the ring with a younger, stronger man with some combat sports experience. Now, Vitor Belfort, he's a little crazy, right? Like, there's a difference. I don't think Jake Paul is going to go in there looking to take Mike Tyson's head off, both for his own safety and because Jake Paul knows the score, right? Jake Paul's not an idiot. This is not his first rodeo at stuff like this. But that would be the fear, right? That, you know, Mike Tyson takes one big shot and gets hurt by Jake Paul. In the same way, it sure looked like Evander Holyfield was going to get hurt if that fight with Belfort went on any further. So for me, that's the big concern. Do you have any concerns like that about how this fight could play out?
Yeah, I have the same concerns. I think that, you know, if I'm just guessing as to what this fight will look like, I think that there, globally, there kind of has been a precedent set, I mean, and even a template set for putting on a boxing match that isn't like a real sanctioned scored boxing event that still looks to the naked eye like it's just a normal fight. You know, Mayweather Logan Paul was like that, right? That wasn't like an actual judged fight or anything like that. But when you were watching it, you couldn't really tell the difference, you know. And even lower level exhibition type fights like James Toney Razor Ruddock or whatever, right? It's an exhibition fight, but it looks in practice like it's real. And they may kind of opt to go that way. Because if they try and do the 2006, if they pull the bait and switch like Tyson and Corey Sanders did, and it's Tyson in a t-shirt and headgear, I don't think that's going to go over particularly well. Like, that will be a PR disaster. Texas, I can't sanction this fight because what is selling this fight is exactly what you said. Well, what if Mike has just like a brief moment and he lands something? That's the only reason why this even can be competitive, because this is like, you know, if you compared this to another sport, if you were like, I don't know, if you took kind of a, a pro but minor league basketball team, you're like, oh, what if the mid-90s Bulls came back and they faced the Fort Wayne Fire Ants? Obviously,
Mad
you know,
Ants. Mad Ants.
Sorry, I gotta be accurate. I was trying to come into your world and use a reference. Yes. Thank you for that. The Mad Ants are going to win, you know, like Horace Grant's in trouble and all like, but it's not boxing. So they can't land, you know, one miracle knockout punch. That's kind of the hope that is there. And the reality is, for the casual viewer out there, listen, there are still some people out there that still think that Mike Tyson's the heavyweight champion of the world. And there, a lot of those people are going to tune in for this. That's, from a marketing perspective, that's what makes this interesting to me too, is that Jake is kind of the organizer of this. He's what's compelling Tyson to come back and do this. But in terms of the people viewing that night, more people are going to be tuning in for Mike Tyson than they are for Jake Paul. So there is still going to be a large faction of people out there that are true believers, and that is going to help sell this fight.
Well, I mean, that's always what helps sell seemingly lopsided combat sports events. That's what, you know, has made UFC guys popular when they get into boxing, because they bring a swarm of true believers with them, you know, that believe that Conor McGregor could win, that Nate Diaz could win, that Francis Ngannou could win. That's the same kind of true believers Mike Tyson is going to bring with him, even though it may not even be scored officially. Like, you know, it could be, you know, an exhibition with no judges. Who knows? We still have no idea what the details are of this event, but it does have the potential to be really interesting early or really sloppy late. I think there's a bunch of ways this ultimately could go. Before I let you go, the news broke this week that Canelo Alvarez is going to face Jaime Munguia. No surprise there. Really, the only intrigue involving this fight over the last couple of weeks has been what platform it lands on. Ultimately, it'll be a PBC production, Amazon Prime. It'll wind up streamed on DAZN as well as a pay-per-view. Look, it's not David Benavidez, but if you were making a list of the most marketable Canelo opponents, Munguia certainly in the top three, right up there with Terrence Crawford. Early thoughts on Canelo against Munguia?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, when we had the discussion a couple weeks ago about, you know, which of the reasonable fights that are out there for Canelo, you know, be it Berlanga or Benavidez or Charlo or Munguia, you know, I expressed excitement about the possibility of a Munguia fight. Like, you know, the most difficult fight of that bunch for Canelo, in my mind, is still Benavidez. So I could choose to be, you know, like disappointed or angry about this, but whatever. I mean, this is going to be a fun fight. There's no way that this fight is going to be boring. The atmosphere is going to be tremendous. Munguia brings a nice fan base. Canelo obviously does as well. This is going to feel like what a May 5th Canelo fight tends to feel like. And that, like, at this stage in Canelo's career, that's kind of what I want for him more than anything. As much as, you know, I want to see him tested, I want to see the younger fighters get their crack at him, but ultimately, Canelo brings that kind of spectacle that only a handful of fighters can, and that's the feeling that I'm looking for out of this fight, and it's going to produce it. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun fight for as long as it lasts. Munguia's done, you know, has done a great job in his last few fights. I think Freddie Roach has been a good trainer for him in his last fight. He is a volume punching, high energy opponent, but he gets hit a lot. And when he gets hit by even decent punchers, he gets rocked. Sergey Derevyanchenko rocked him. John Ryder even caught him a little bit. You go back to earlier fights, Spike O'Sullivan rocked him at one point. None of these guys have the punching power of Canelo Alvarez. So I think Munguia is going to be wildly entertaining early. I think he's going to have his moments against Canelo, but at some point, a counter shot is coming his way. When that counter shot comes his way, I think that puts his lights out. I think that'll be it for Jaime Munguia. But it is what it is. No problem with it. Canelo wants to fight Munguia. It's better than a Berlanga fight right now. It's better than a Jermall Charlo fight right now. So it's certainly a marketable fight that will generate, I think, pretty good interest as we get towards May 4th. Corey, good stuff, man. I am sure you will be calling a Uzbeki fight near you. Is that what's what is there any?
It can't be soon enough.
Yeah. Are you taking pride in the rise of the Uzbeki boxers? Like we saw Madrimov pick up a world title, Giasov knocking at the door. You know, these are your guys, Corey.
These are my guys. Yeah. Well, and I was calling them when they were fighting on, you know, these like 22 fight Shamo boxing marathons in Russia. Yes. But even that, like the pride that I took in being able to call a card that long, that's being taken away from me because these Saudi cards are clocking in at roughly the same same length. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not special anymore.
You're always going to be special to those guys, Corey.
Thank you.
Always be special. Corey, good stuff, man. We'll see you soon.
We'll see you soon, man.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Corey Erdman for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.